We came in.
Welcome back to the Rock of Ages podcast. As always, I am your glory CEO and copyright holder of the Rock of Ages podcast, Cade Welch. With me are Romy.
Hi.
Andrew, who's once again still in a burlap sack.
Salutations.
And, oh my God. After recovering from their COVID vaccine, Riley. Now get in the sack. We're missing the episode.
Oh, okay. Sounds good. Okay. Thanks. I deserve it.
All right. The Wall is the 11th studio album by the English rock band Pink Floyd, released on November 30th, 1979, under Harvest Records in the UK and Columbia Records in the US. It was produced by Bob Ezrin, guitarist David Gilmour, James Guthrie, and bassist Roger Waters, and the genres are art rock, progressive rock, and progressive pop. And I'm going to read the AllMusic review from Roe v. Staff. The Wall was Roger Waters' crowning accomplishment in Pink Floyd. It documented the rise and fall of a rock star named Pink Floyd, wink wink nudge nudge, based in Waters' own experiences and the tendencies he'd observed in people around him. By then, the bassist had firm control of the group's direction, working mostly alongside David Gilmour and bringing in producer Bob Ezrin as an outside collaborator. Drummer Nick Mason was barely involved, while keyboardist Richard Wright seemed to be completely out of the picture. Still, The Wall was a mighty sprawling affair, featuring 26 songs with vocals, nearly as many as all previous Floyd albums combined. The story revolves around the fictional Pink Floyd's isolation behind a psychological wall. The Wall grows as various parts of his life spin out of control, and he grows incapable of dealing with his neurosis. The album opens by welcoming the unwitting listener to Floyd's show, then turns back to childhood memories of his father's death in World War II, his mother's overprotectiveness, and his fascination with and fear of sex. By the time Goodbye Cruel World closes the first disc, The Wall is built and Pink is trapped in the midst of mental breakdown. On disc 2, the gentle acoustic phrasings of Is There Anybody Out There and the lifting orchestrations of Nobody Home reinforce Floyd's feel of isolation. When his record company uses drugs to coax him to perform, his onstage persona is transformed into a homophobic, race-baiting fascist. In the trial, he mentally prosecutes himself, and The Wall comes tumbling down. This ambitious concept album was an across-the-board smash, topping the Billboard album chart for 15 weeks in 1980. The single, Another Brick of the Wall Part 2, was the country's bestseller for 4 weeks. The Wall spawned an elaborate stage show, so elaborate, in fact, that the band was able to bring it to only a few cities, and a full-length film. It also marked the last time Waters and Gilmour would work together as equal partners. All right, what do we think of Pink Floyd, The Wall?
I think it was pretty good.
I know, it's really good.
I liked it.
Yeah, I also like it.
Yeah, it's perhaps one of the biggest albums of all time, really.
What can I say? It's Pink Floyd, the musical.
Yeah, it's progressive rock for theater kids.
Yeah.
I liked the part where he became a Nazi.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Built the wall.
Yeah.
We need to build a wall.
And that's why we build the wall.
I'll make it 10 feet high. What's the matter, pal? Bye-bye.
Yeah.
No one getting in.
Don't worry. The lyrics on side 4, especially on In the Flesh Part 2, Run Like Hell and Waiting for the Worms, they were all written ironically. None of the Pink Floyd members actually are racist, homophobic, or anti-Semitic. although Roger Waters does hate Israel, kind of, so it's a bit iffy on that situation. So, what do we think of the story?
I think it was a pretty good story. It was obviously based off his actual, one of the Pink Floyd members' actual laughs.
Yeah.
You know, it was based off how actual Britain was, you know, acting in the schools and all that.
Yeah.
It was a pretty, good story. Yeah. Once again, I lacked a part where he was in a coma or whatever, and then he was so full of himself that he thought he was a dictator.
I never really understood the segue between that. Like, your record company is drugging you, and then all of a sudden you awaken as a Nazi. Is he like having some sort of dream, or was this actually in real life?
A hallucination.
Yeah, but that still doesn't make sense. If he stops having the hallucination, then what's happening with the fascist revolution? Is it still going on?
That's up to us to decide.
Yeah, yeah.
That's up for the viewer to decide, Andrew. And precisely because you couldn't understand that, get in this section.
I mean, that was the one part of the story I actually didn't understand. I understood a lot most of the other of the story, so I'm cool.
Are you cool, or do you just perceive yourself to be cool?
I know, I'm...
What if we drug you, Andrew? What would you imagine yourself to be?
An amphibia?
Gross.
I still need to watch that, and the Owl House.
Yeah.
I'm so excited for season two for the Owl House.
I'm sure if we drugged Riley, she'd hallucinate she was in the Boiling Isles.
Maybe if I get drugged, I'll hallucinate that things are going exactly like I planned. I kind of related to the story of the wall in that way.
I put this in my status today, but I changed it. But I said, if you relate to the wall, I have this new album for you. It's called Therapy. But yeah, so the main character, Pink, is not necessarily one you should be sympathizing with. You can sympathize with parts of him, but you can't really sympathize with him as a general because A, he literally turns into a Nazi in the last quarter in his own mind, and he's also kind of a terrible person. He cheated on his wife in Young Lust, and Don't Leave Me Now, he confessed to beating her to a pulp. Yeah, that's really something that I, as a person, resonate with. Good job, Roger Waters.
John Lennon was listening to this album and was like, dang, he makes some point.
John Lennon phoned Roger Waters in the middle of the night and said, if you don't add in a reference to beating wives, I will give a bad review to you.
Wasn't he dead, though, at that point?
No, this was released in 1979. He was shot and killed the year later.
Next year.
Yep.
So, another Brick in the Wall, Part 2. Biggest hit on the album. Went to number one in the U.S. charts, I think. I don't know. But it was really, really popular. And it may be overplayed. It may be overplayed, but still, it's overplayed for a reason. It slaps. I'm the one saying it slaps now because
Katie isn't... Harder than Fruit Salad by the Wiggles?
No.
Or Castaways?
Okay. Okay, fine. Castaways bops harder.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, another Brick in the Wall Part 2, in my area, there's a station that uses the instrumental as the underscore for school information, which kind of rubs me the wrong way, knowing the true meaning of the song.
Yeah, for those who don't know, Roger Waters grew up in the 1950s, where schools in Britain were especially tough, because they were really abusive, unlike the schools in America, or... maybe anywhere else at the time. It was just really strict for him. And it was still very strict up in the 70s and the 80s. Why can't Doug Walker understand that? Why can't he just look it up? Were schools bad in the UK in the 70s? It's not that hard, Doug. For the viewers who don't know, I should probably give a few context. There's this internet critic out there named Doug Walker. He also calls himself the Nostalgia Critic, and couple years ago, he released a review of the Wall movie, and he basically made every single hot take you could without doing any backup research beforehand. It's really bad, guys, I swear.
Yeah, and it ends with him singing the SpongeBob theme with Corey Taylor.
That is ironically the only good part of that entire review.
Yeah. All great things should end with the SpongeBob theme.
Yeah.
Yep.
A song by Corey Taylor.
Yep.
Or Avril Lavigne.
Yeah. Or anyone, yeah, really. Anyone singing the SpongeBob theme song can make it work.
Yeah.
Let's we're gonna do a new thing here called Favorite Song and Worst Song. First, we're gonna list off our favorite songs one by one, and then we're gonna list off our worst songs. I'll go first. My favorite song was, it's a tie between Mother and Comfortably Numb. I mean, like, Mother is really good lyrically and musically, I've been warming up to it, but Comfortably Numb, that's the song. Like, it's got that guitar solo. It's just, I don't really need to hear it again, but it's just the song, you know?
My favorite was Another Brick in the Wall Part 2.
Noob.
My favorite would probably be Goodbye Blue Sky, because
yes, that is such a good song.
Home. Yeah, it hits home for me now.
Yeah.
It's about, like, loss of innocence and...
Yeah,
how, like, the scars of the past leave the present.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Doug Walker's big take on that song was that it was Oscar bait 3 years before the film ever came out.
I don't know what it was. I think it was Is There Anyone Out There? Mainly because of the guitar, and I really like that.
The classical guitar at the end?
Yeah, that was it.
That was it. It's really atmospheric, vibes, whatnot. Yeah, it's just... In this part...
Yeah, wait, let me see if that one's it. Hold on.
It is it. Just trust me. So in this part...
Yep, it is. That's my favorite one. I really like
this,
that one.
In this part of the opera, the rock opera, Pink has just built the wall surrounding himself from society. And he's wondering whether it was the right choice to block himself from society, so he... decides to go to anyone for help, but no one is either there or willing to help, and now he realizes how alone he is, and that's the context of Is There Anybody Out There?
Yeah, I feel like we've all had that moment where we've just, like, kind of, like, shut ourselves out from, like, society, and we've built the, like, we've just, like, fallen into, like, our own little, like, space and, like, the, like, sadness and, like, stuff. I'm sure that we've all done that before.
Yeah, the wall itself is a story of just that thing we all have, like where we just feel too much and we shut ourselves from society. This rock opera, The Wall, it portrays how not to do that, how the wrong things can lead to your mental downfall, and that if you ever are going to shut yourself off from society, you should either not do it or not to be like Pink and be an asshole about it.
Part of the reason why Goodbye Blue Sky struck with me was because like I've been just losing a lot of stuff from I've been losing touch with a lot of stuff from my childhood and teenhood and it, like just this week the theater I saw my first movie in shuttered. It was a reissue of The Little Mermaid. That was my first movie in around 1997, 98. And the last one was a couple of weeks ago. It was another reissue for Love of the Game.
Hmm. You know,
Kevin Costner.
That's a Sam Raimi production.
Oh, yeah. J.K. Simmons was also in it. And John was in it. And everyone was in it.
Think, Kevin. Think. You're fighting. You're throwing balls so that your arm can give out in 2 years.
I should have shown you guys this, but in the Wall movie, there's this amazing video of Goodbye Blue Sky with such wonderful animation. Probably some of the best I've ever seen, really. It's one of my favorite moments in the entire film, along with the trial scene. Yeah, we were gonna watch the Wall movie in preparation of this, or at least I was, but I honestly couldn't bring myself to do it because I didn't have much time, and I did not want to relive the scene where Pink Floyd, the person in the movie, Pink Floyd's The Wall, shaves his nipples. That's right, he does that.
Ew, what? Ew.
I don't.
What, you guys didn't know that? All guys gotta shave them.
I don't want to live, I don't want to think about it. Don't worry, it's not just the nipples. He shaves his entire body, but it's just that those particular parts that make me squeamish.
Let's just move on.
Yes.
What do you guys have to say?
Okay, least favorite songs.
What else do you guys have to say?
Least favorite songs, go. My least favorite song was Stop. Nothing against it. It was just 30 seconds too short and nothing. Also that and The Show Must Go On. Not as good as the Queen's The Show Must Go On, and nothing really happens. Although I do like the musical callback to Mother.
And it's not as good as The Review Must Go On by Doug Walker.
This marks the only time where Doug Walker is better than Pink Floyd at something. What was your least favorite, Cade?
I don't have a least favorite. It was a pretty good album. You know what? Least favorite is just the Doug Walker versions.
Fair.
Yeah, that would also be my least favorite.
Are you sure you don't have a least favorite from the original album? Or at least one that you probably wouldn't want to listen to again?
Let's say everything that isn't Another Brick in the Wall.
There you go. What about you, Riley?
I'd say Stop, because it's just like 30 seconds, nothing really to do with the plot, if I'm being honest.
I'd say The Show Must Go On is probably less to do with the plot, because Stop is where Pink realizes he's gone too far. The Show Must Go On really doesn't serve a purpose as much as it does a link between Comfortably Numb and In the Flesh Part 2.
Also not as good as The Show Must Go On by Leo Sayer.
Mm-hmm. I should also say that The Show Must Go On is so unimportant that they don't even feature it in the Wall movie.
It'd be like that sometime.
Yeah.
So it's like the inverse of the movie bonus song, where it's like...
Yeah,
where a song is written for the movie.
Yeah.
Adaptation of a musical.
Speaking of which, Empty Spaces was a song that really didn't leave much of an impact on me, but the movie version, which is called What Shall We Do Now, is absolutely amazing. And we'll listen to it right after we're done recording. And we'll watch it too.
Is it as good as Oh No, What We're Gonna Do from VeggieTales?
I don't know. Maybe it's better.
I have been getting so many videos of VeggieTales in my recommended for a long time now. It's funny.
Yeah.
It's honestly funny.
It's funny because you don't expect it. So, you've looked at the album cover, right? It's just bland, not really out there. Just a brick wall with the graffiti art of the name of the band and the album.
It would be much better if there was a 40-something-year-old middle-aged dude bursting through it in a weird cartoonish character drawing. That'd be
weird.
Yeah.
But what I haven't shown you is the inside of the album.
Yeah.
On the inside, this is what you see.
Very evocative of the song Build a Wall from Shrek the Musical.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I absolutely love your notes for Stop. So funny.
Yeah.
Stop. Please do.
Yep. So, yeah. the inside of this album was it was drew by artist Gerald Scarf, who also did the Wall movie, and who also did the animation for the hit Disney film Hercules.
Oh, man. No wonder Hercules has such a distinct, like, style to it.
Danny DeVito.
And fun fact, yeah. when Doug Walker was commentating on the animation for Hercules, which was done by Scarf, he said it looked like Las Vegas.
It does have that Las Vegas feel to it, though.
No, it does it? I don't know,
because I've never been to Las Vegas. I don't know how I feel about it.
Yeah. So basically, Doug Walker hates Las Vegas because he was like, why does it look like Vegas? It's funny.
I'm about to throw out so much shade that you're never going to see the sun again.
Yeah.
Never see the sunshine again.
Yeah. Oh, by the way,
let the sunshine in.
While the original Empty Spaces wasn't really too memorable, one thing that stuck out, did anyone notice like backwards vocals being spoken in the song?
No.
Well, if you reverse the song and you listen to those backwards vocals, you're going to hear Roger Waters saying, "Congratulations, you found the hidden message."
Oh man, that radiates the same energy as Bravest Warriors. There's like a myth. There's like a character, a hallucinated character speaking backwards. And if you play it backwards, it goes, "This is a message playing backwards."
Or the bit in Gravity Falls.
That reminds me.
It goes, backwards message.
That reminds me. It was JFK from Clone High. And it was like, he's like, gets hurt or something. And he's talking like in a like backwards voice. But it's like, he's going like, "I'm telling you to watch Clone High." And it's like really funny. He's like, yes, I love it.
Yeah. So, so while the album when come together is pretty good, but the making of the album was really tough because at this point Roger Waters was getting on the other Pink Floyd members' nerves. Like, he was being really pretentious and compulsive and overbearing with the other members, and they, almost everyone had it. And like the tipping point came when Rick Wright did something. Rick Wright was the keyboardist. He did something that Roger didn't like, and so Roger fired him from the band.
Dang.
Yeah.
And it's kind of sad because Rick Wright was like the cutest member of Pink Floyd. Guitarist David Gilmour was definitely the hottest.
Can we get an F in the chat?
Yeah. And Rick Wright was brought back on the Wall sessions, but he was never rehired to the band until Roger quit in like the mid-80s. So he played with Pink Floyd in the early 80s in their Wall concerts because you gotta have your keyboardist, but he was never brought back into the band until Roger left. And to make it even sadder, Roger passed away in 2008. No, not Roger, Richard, Rick Wright.
Yeah, you're right. Roger Waters was still alive.
Yeah. Guess what, him? I guess even 40 years later, he and David Gilmour still are recovering from their falling out. And even though Roger's tried many times to redeem their friendship, David Gilmour has banned Roger from using the Pink Floyd website. And
no Pink Floyd website.
No site for you.
No site for you. 1 year.
I love Seinfeld.
No.
My mom's gonna really like that reference. She makes that reference all the time.
Yeah. So, David Gilmour uses the Pink Floyd website primarily to promote theater shows he does with his wife, Polly. And Roger's like, "No, that's what you can't use the Pink Floyd website for." And then David bans him from the website.
Wow.
It's like that. It's like that meme. Like, "No, you can't use the Pink Floyd website to promote your theater shows with your wife." And then he's like, "Website ban, go brr."
I captioned my latest YTP with "Haha, Bren, go brr."
Yeah. So, you think that the quarantine would be a good idea to reflect on who you are and your relationships, But instead you're like, no, he was mean to me 40 years ago. I'm going to ban him from the website.
Dang.
I would too, going to be honest.
I mean, yeah, honestly, David kind of has a point. I mean, as much as I respect Roger Waters as a vocal and musical personality, he is a bit of a bad person. Like I said, he's not a big fan of Israel. He made an entire rant about it in his bathrobe about Eurovision, Israel, whatnot. And
what, like, he was mad about Israel's Eurovision performance? Like, what?
I don't know the full story, but he is a bit of an asshole, definitely. Yeah. Like, the inspiration for The Wall came in 1977 on the band's In the Flesh tour, before the song In the Flesh even existed. And Roger was performing in Montreal, and, like, the fans were getting on Roger's nerves a lot, and he started swearing at them. And then, one of the fans, like, broke out from the barricades and tried to jump on the stage. And you want to know what Roger did next?
He punched him.
He spit on him.
Ew. I think I read somewhere on there. Yeah, I think I read somewhere that he did that.
Yeah. And it's even funnier because, like, 7 months prior to that spitting incident, the Pink Floyd song Dogs had a lyric called "Who was trained not to spit in the fan?"
Oh, wait. Nice. Oh, my God.
So it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Oh, that reminded me of Katharine Hepburn spitting on somebody who was pissing her off.
I look forward to the Pink Floyd biopic, and they show us in 4K an actor playing Roger Waters spitting on someone. You know, if they were gonna do a Pink Floyd biopic, I would definitely want Adam Driver to be Roger Waters. They have a similar bone structure. I'll show you guys after we're done recording.
Mother, do you think they'll drop the bomb? Mother, do you think they'll like this song? Mother, do you think they'll try to break my balls? Ooh, mother should have built the wall.
Or so, the famous children's choir in Another Brick in the Wall, Part 2. It was done in complete secrecy because, as I mentioned before, schooling in the UK that time sucked. And I have a couple more anecdotes for you. Bob Geldof, the punk guy who played Pink in Pink Floyd's The Wall, he originally didn't want to do it because he hated Pink Floyd. And he told this to his taxi driver, "Oh, I can't believe they want me to do this Pink Floyd movie. They know I hate Pink Floyd." Because punks at that time really hated progressive rock because it went against everything they stood for. It was like, they thought it was like this overproduced, over-synth, like, capitalist machine. So Bob Geldof thought it was weird that they would come to him for the Pink Floyd The Wall movie. And then Bob Geldof finally agrees to do the movie. He talks to Roger, like, "I told my cabbie guy that I hate Pink Floyd." And then Roger's like, "That cabbie guy is my brother."
Oof.
Bob Geldof, of course, went on to found the Live Aid concert.
Yep, and if it weren't for him, we wouldn't have Queen at Live Aid, so thanks, Bob.
And if it wasn't for that, we wouldn't have Bohemian Rhapsody, the movie.
Such a great movie.
And we wouldn't have the soundtrack. We wouldn't have the soundtrack without Bob Geldof talking to Roger Waters' brother in a taxi. So, a lot of critics didn't like this album when it came out. They thought it was overblown and pretentious, which you could say that for...
They themselves were the nostalgia critic.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it was up for the Album of the Year Grammy.
Yeah.
But
I should also
alongside
I should also mention that Robert Christgau gave it a B-, and he gives out B-minuses like A+, but he treats B-minuses like C-minuses. Like, even if B-minus is a good grade, he's still gonna shit on the band because he doesn't like them. Although he did say in his wall review, it wasn't bad. So hooray, we can take some solace in that.
Yeah, and like, Acclaimed Music's all-time top albums still has Funhouse in a higher position than The Wall.
I can't believe that some people would prefer 5 minutes of incoherent rambling over the greatest lyric of all time, which comes in Mother. Mother, do you think they'll try to break my balls?
Well, not. You mean, so, like,
it's such a society we live in.
We live in a society. Yeah,
those best albums of all time lists are not to be trusted.
Only our opinions matter, people. Yeah, so this album is great, but how great is it? Let's go around out of 10, Cade. What did you think?
Well, I'm gonna give it a 9 out of 10, because it's a good... It's good. Not for the explanation, it's good.
Okay. Jackson's not here, but he is next alphabetically. He told me to give this a perfect 10 out of 10.
I'd give it a 7.
Do tell. Why?
I couldn't really think of, like, any, like, memorable bits in here. There are some things. There's some ups. There's their downs.
I mean, yeah, Another Brick in the Wall, Comfortably Numb. Those are, like, the two standouts. Oh, and Hey You. I can't believe none of us mentioned Hey You yet.
That song was in Squid and the Whale, which I have yet to watch in full. I also... I'm thinking of getting it in the Criterion Edition. There's a lot of... I keep saying stuff like that, but it's true.
Romy, what would you give it?
Noah Baumbach is a great filmmaker. I'd give it a 9.
I'll be more generous. I'll give it an 8.5.
I mean, it's your choice.
This might actually top Bear.
No, it might not.
Maybe.
We've got a 10, we've got an 8, we've got a 9. It's gonna do it.
Right. Yeah, so this album is really good. I mean, if we're going through technical problems, like it's a bit too slow, or the story doesn't make too much sense near the end, or like the Pink is not a relatable person, but if we're going personally, for personal reasons, this is a really good album. And I listened to it a lot a couple years ago, and I'll still listen to it from time to time again, because because start to finish, it really is an experience. Don't think of these songs as like a separate songs. Think of them as like four quarters of an extremely giant song, because that's really what this all is. It's like mainly what a majority of Pink Floyd's discography is. And while I'd say that the other albums of Pink Floyd's discography are better, like, of course, Dark Side of the Moon, and also Wish You Were Here and Animals. Those are also really good, but The Wall, it may not be the same caliber as them, but on its own, it is really good, and I think I'm just going to give it a 10 out of 10 for being super epic. I should also mention that Roger Waters tried to do a follow-up of The Wall a couple years later called The Final Cut. It was kind of hard to do since Rick Wright was out of the picture and Nick Mason has been replaced by a drum machine anyway. And David Gilmour and Roger Waters hated each other's guts at this point, so working together was kind of hard to do. So I should also say that David and Roger hated each other at this point so much that they refused to even work in the same recording studio.
Dang.
It was like in the same town and everything, but they didn't want to work in the same recording studio. They're still more functional than the Eagles, though, because when they were recording The Long Run or like overdubs for one of their live albums, like, I forget which two Eagles despised each other the most, but the two of them, not only did they not want to record in the same recording studio, they didn't even want to record on the same side of the United States.
Whoa, like, That's like,
he's like that shows violence.
Yeah, that's just like how when Whitney Houston and Mariah Carey did "When You Believe," they hated each other's guts. the Christ version of "When You Believe."
Yeah.
Prince of Egypt.
Yeah. Oh, I should also mention that. No, we are not getting to the final cut on this podcast because it is boring, and B, it is boring.
Well, you say that, but once again, Andrew, you're not in charge here.
Yeah.
I mean, technically he is. He monitors the podcast.
But at least it doesn't have a love monkey unlike Dinosaur.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Yeah,
I could David Gilmour. Well, just make the next episode after Jackson's birthday episode, the final cut. You never know.
David Gilmour gets like 10 lead vocals on The Wall. He only gets one lead vocal on Not Now, John, and he did most of the band's lead vocals in the 70s. And he only has one lead vocal in the final cut. I'm not gonna cross hairs here when I say it's the best song off the album.
Ooh.
It's like Young Lust, except 2 minutes longer. Bit more bombastic, but still pretty cool. Alright, so next time we are also looking at The Wall. But not just any wall. Cade, want to tell us?
Nostalgia Critics, The Wall is next week's episode. Don't miss it, baby. Man. It's going to be great.
Yep. I can't wait for you guys to listen to us suffer. Thank you.
Yay!
There is no pain, you are receding. A distant ship, smoke on the horizon. You are only coming through in waves. Your lips move, but I can't hear what you say.
You're listening to Rock of Ages, where I introduce my friends who are much into music theater to different types of pop and rock music. And sometimes, they'll introduce me to some theater music. Wait, isn't this